So, good morning and welcome to Sunday Morning Sit with Seattle Insight. And how lovely that we get to do this together. And it's been over 6 years that we've been meeting on Sundays, so it's really lovely. And as you all know, we're spending this whole year on the Paramis, and we're in month five. The first month we kind of did an overview, and then we went to generosity, then morality, then renunciation, and now we're in the month of wisdom. And my name is Suze Appel, and I'll be leading us this morning. So last Sunday, Arv offered some wonderful reflections on the difference between knowledge and wisdom and the process of developing wisdom from our various life experiences. He said that wisdom comes in stages, and in order to make room for those changes, we need to let go of the ego. And he also shared some lessons in discernment. So this morning, I'm going to continue that conversation and continue to see wisdom as a process, how it develops and matures from practice into what Ajahn Suchito describes as, and I love this phrase, an embodied heart and gut knowing. An embodied heart and gut knowing. So the steps of this process of the maturing of wisdom are slightly different from Arv's, but let's take his with us and include these new ones. First, I'd like to suggest that we recognize the innate wisdom that we already have. Secondly, that we pay attention to the dissonance or the dis-ease that arises inside, and that we spend time with it. We get to understand it, be curious and caring as we explore. And third, that we recommit to practice. And we practice with the aspiration to remember the three characteristics, when they show up, how we relate to them, what understandings arise. And just as Arv described how he went from knowledge to wisdom through a personal process, in his example, it was his divorce, I'm following suit, and this morning I'm going to share this evolving process of the process of evolving wisdom through the lens of aging. And, you know, all of us have certain issues that are up in our lives, transitions or challenges. And I'm offering mine this morning. I'm going to be talking about wisdom through the lens of aging, but each of us has our own lens that we can look at this parami of wisdom through. Our teachers define wisdom differently. Almost all of them define wisdom as having insight into the three characteristics of impermanence, the unsatisfactory nature of phenomenon, and selflessness, you know, dukkha, anicca, and anatta. Sylvia Boorstein, her book is one of the four resources we've been using all year on Sunday, she defines wisdom as the ability to know deeply the truth of how things are. And I find both of these definitions really helpful guideposts. So as I look at what innate wisdom on aging is already present, the first thing that I notice is gratitude. Gratitude has been a huge part of my practice for a long time, and I often start every morning with some kind of gratitude practice. You know, I live alone, so it's good nobody watches me as I walk around and say thank you to my plants and thank you to the beams in my house and all of that. But that gratitude really grounds me in what life is like and reminds me of the abundance that is here. I'm also really grateful to be as old as I am. Next Sunday, I turn 80. And wow, what a gift to have lived this long. My father died at 39, My sister died at 44. I have had friends who've died in their 50s, and Billy was only 71. So here I am, having had a full life, you know, certainly the bumps and potholes of it, but wow, a lot of gratitude for having made it this long. And the main way that this innate understanding is showing up in the trust that I have in what I already know is true, it's trusting the Dhamma, impermanence, you know, all the risings and passings away, all the ways that everything changes. You know, I have seen those times when I've added the second arrow to difficult situations and as a result created more suffering for me and others. But I've also experienced those times, what Sylvia Boorstein calls untying, those moments when I've been able to cut through the delusion that the mind was presenting, some of those storms that I talked about, and have moments of clear seeing. Sylvia Boorstein says that suffering is caused by the mind demanding that things be different from how they are. That third noble truth, that the end of suffering is possible. And she says there are only two possible responses to every challenge: balanced acceptance or embittered resistance. Acceptance is freedom, resistance is suffering. And I know the experience of both acceptance and resistance. So I'm seeing how I've been making a very big deal out of this birthday. So others' responses have certainly fed that. You know, so many people go, wow, you don't look like you're 80. And of course, do any of us know what 80 looks like, or 70 or 90 or anything else? But I've contributed to it as well. And part of it is remembering that my mom died at 83. And that's just 3 years from now. You know, and I know, I mean, that's kind of superstitious fantasy thinking, but it makes me think about the time that's left, that there's only so many, there's way fewer years left than I've already lived. I'm also reminded of the paradox of loving life. I've shared on Sunday morning how somehow I was given a general inclination of mind-heart, which is positive and optimistic. I don't know where it came from. I'm just grateful that I have it. But loving life as I do makes clinging to life seem to be such a natural outflow and not a problem. You know, and loving people as we do, it's a source of so much joy. And it includes that element of clinging and wanting to keep them around. I mean, we know we can't, but we want to anyway. Again, back to Sylvia Boorstein, she says that everything that is dear to us causes pain because it changes. It gets old, sick, and dies. It's the very dearness of things that makes us vulnerable to the inevitable pain of change, of disappointment or loss. Caring, she says, makes us vulnerable. I feel like I know that. And then going back to gratitude, I continue to be grateful even as I experience some of the natural diminishments of what accompanies aging. You know, I'm reminded of that all of this is natural diminishment. It arises because I've lived this long. And the three characteristics that life is impermanent, imperfect, and impersonal. I notice that when there's some resistance or grumbling about the diminishment. This morning I was trying to tell a friend about pictures at an exhibition, and Mussorgsky's name was nowhere in my mind. It came to me like 45 minutes later when I was no longer talking to this friend. You know, and I really try not to take it personally. And I know it's not personal, but sometimes it's hard. And then there's the change in my energy. I've always been just, you know, one of those energetic go, go, go people. you know, and I used to spend 4 to 5 hours at working in the garden, no problem. And now I'm pretty much done after two. I've also been really more and more aware of the various identities that I held on to. It's Arv's second step that I got to let go of some of this ego. Growing up in my family of origin, what was really important was being quick-witted, having a smart alecky or humorous or sarcastic response to whatever is being shared, having a big vocabulary, being well-spoken. And now, what am I doing with all these lost words? I'm not so quick. One of the main things my mom taught the three of us, I have a brother and sister, was how to play cards. She loved card games and passed that on to us. She was a very kind, quiet, kind of shy, gentle woman, except when she was playing cards. She demanded that her kids knew the rules, kept track of all the cards played, and that we played well and smartly. Unlike a lot of parents, she never let us win unless we won through effort. So I'm known among my friends as a bit of a card shark. But changes, impermanence. What happens when the card shark retires or no longer keeps track quite so well? So there's stuff that I know I've been feeling and experiencing the truth of these three characteristics. The second step that I suggest is that we really notice moments of dissonance or dis-ease when there's more resistance to the truth of the three characteristics. One area of resistance that is really showing up, and I think it shows up for others who are confronting being old, is independence. I love living as I do. I live in a fabulous place. It's a commercial building. I have a lovely apartment, a deck with a big garden, and a viewing platform of Lake Union. It's an oasis in a noisy, busy neighborhood. And I feel such an attachment to this place. And I also feel an attachment to living independently. And yet, the truth of the five recollections, I am of the nature to age, get sick, and die. So where is this independence going to be? I have two heirs, my son and my niece, and I've asked them both to honestly tell me when they notice that the diminishments have gotten more serious and significant, and when we might need to start talking about me living less independently. Ajahn Suchito, his book is so great on the crossing the floods, the paramis. He encourages us to let go of the effort to be whatever our driven minds demand of us. He says you can never satisfy a driven mind. And I've been asking myself with this aging and all the challenges, how is my mind being driven and toward what end? I know that one of the important parts of this practice is acknowledging when clinging is present. I feel it. I bring the truth of the Dhamma to it. And then I sit with the clinging, and who knows what happens with it. Last month, when I talked about renunciation of worry, I shared Ajahn Suchito's comment that when he's getting closer to death, he really does not want to meet it with a grumbling mind. And me either. So can my mind feel the letting go of me as the owner of this property and all of my tenants and the smart and sassy Sue's, quick-witted card shark? You know, what happens when all that's gone? Suchita says that a wise person gives up the ranting of the self to find a more natural tune. So what's the new tune I can turn to? You know, what does greater acceptance sound like? And during the five recollections, I notice sometimes, especially in that fourth recollection where it says, I will become separate from all I hold dear, I often throw in a desire for exceptions, a way out. So a couple days ago when I was reciting it, I said, and I will become separate from all I hold dear. Then the mind says, yeah, but then I'll find new things to hold dear and feel a tenderness towards them. But can I see the delusion of that kind of thinking, of wanting an exception, wanting a way out of the truth of the way things are? And lastly, this last part of the process really is just remembering how important our practice is. Aligning myself with the five recollections, reminding myself of the truth of aging, illness, death, change, and loss. It's the truth of the way things are. And when we were in meditation, I said, it's not the only truth. You know, there's so much joy. There's so much to discover and to live with. But it's a big part of the truth. And when I see that desire for a way out of the truth, I see it as delusion. And I set the intention once again to be with things the way they are, period. No exceptions. So practice becomes such an important part of this evolution and deepening of wisdom. So I'd like to spend my last minutes on how do we practice so we are nourishing wisdom. Utejaniya, many of us get his daily quotes of wisdom. He said recently, only when the mind is simple can wisdom develop. A complicated mind, a mind which thinks, expects, and plans, blocks off wisdom. So a simple mind, a quiet mind, a calm mind, a mind that stays in the moment with what is happening in this moment and the next. Of course there's a role for good planning in our lives. We need to do that to be responsible people and responsible citizens and responsible members of our families. But as parts of our practice, simplifying our lives and our minds is also important. Like many of you, I have a tendency, it's a habit, of overfilling my days. I volunteer in SIMS a lot. I call myself a bit of a Dharma junkie. I sit with people almost every single day. I want to keep up all my friendships, so I make sure I schedule all them. I have a fabulous garden, and of course, this time of year, gardening is just yelling at me, come out here and pay attention. I have my business that I take care of. I love reading, and I feel a desire. There's so many good books to read. I play the piano, and I have this Chopin piece that I want to turn into a jazz piece on the piano. I don't think I know enough to do that. There's a new man in my life, and I want to spend time with him. There's just so much wanting, so much doing. And then there's the retirement piece. And everybody says, so what are you going to do when you retire? You know, what's your bucket list? You know, and I don't have a bucket list. And there's nothing wrong with having something like that. I think the important thing is, what kind of energy do we bring to all this doing? Next month, the next parami is energy, so we'll talk more about it next month. But is the energy that I bring to all this doing and filling up of life and making it so busy, does it have the quality of must have, must do, a kind of made up urgency? How do I simplify all of this so that the mind can continue to develop wisdom? One of the things I think is that part of a simple and quiet mind is when I choose non-involvement in all the mind's content. We all know this. Boy, the mind just gives us so much stuff to get to attach to. But those moments when I can actually step away from identifying with and claiming as my own the content of my mind, instead, I can watch it. I can bring awareness to it And also try to notice when that particular content passes away, when it's no longer present. Being the observer and not the star of the show. And part of this non-involvement is noticing all the things in our lives, in our culture, which screams at us, buy me, get me, go here. You've got to have this. This is the path to happiness. Sylvia Boorstein says that when we are relaxed and reasonably content, we are naturally wise. Relaxed and reasonably content. So how do we practice that? You know, we remember all the discussions from earlier in the year on the first paramis, acknowledging the natural abundance in life and not acting out of a sense of lack or inadequacy. Aligning our lives with our highest values and living from those. Practicing restraint and renouncing all that is no longer serves us. And let's not forget humor. Oh my goodness. I'm so grateful that sometimes when I get so caught up in a mind state storm, I can stop and just laugh at myself. I go, really? I'm getting all worked up about this? And is this going to have any positive effect on anything? Yesterday at Clear Mountain Monastery, there was a visiting nun, and she said, a good litmus test for all of our actions of body, speech, and mind is asking ourselves, does this action increase wholesome mind states and decrease unwholesome mind states? So there's a kind of simplicity about this litmus test that can help us as we're guiding, how do we nourish wisdom? So how am I practicing with aging, and how am I bringing whatever wisdom I have to this process and opening to what aging has to teach me? You know, and I think all of us who've, you know, as we've lived a number of years, there's some things that just living this long and having a practice where we've reflected and thought about stuff. So one of the things that living this long that aging has taught me, without a doubt, that my heart does not require protection. That throughout this practice and practicing with the Brahmaviharas and the gentleness, the compassion wing of practice, that I've experienced the real joy of when I present to my world a softer, gentler, tender-hearted person. It's the one I aspire to be. It's not always there, but showing up through that kind of lens of kindness and softness really offers to my little sphere of influence something other than greed and ill will. I've also learned, although I don't always practice it, but that sometimes the most skillful action is doing and saying nothing and pausing and just waiting a while and seeing how the mind and heart is changing moment by moment, and seeing maybe in a few moments something wiser will come forward. I've also learned so clearly the non-binary nature of experience. Sadness arises and we start believing that I'm a sad person. But along with sadness, especially for those of us who've really experienced grief, we know that joy is often right there next to it as you think about all the joy that you experienced with the person who is no longer there. Confusion arises, and then we start identifying as a confused person. But really, right along with confusion are all the things that you actually understand and about which you have a pretty clear sense of what to do next. Fear comes up, but often along with fear, especially if you're fearful of kind of like a new thing, you're not really sure how it's going to turn out, if you explore more deeply, there's delight, there's curiosity, there's interest. And we can not only know that these apparent opposites exist together, but we can encourage them to coexist. Ajahn Suchito says, when moods and thoughts affected by ill will are present, we bring forth goodwill. When moods and thoughts affected by craving are present, we bring forth renunciation and restraint. So aging is another one of those ongoing processes. I don't know what it's going to feel like in 5 years or even next week. But my intention is to continue to have an open heart and mind, to have front and center the words of wisdom, be with the truth of the way things are. We accept that life is unpredictable, unreliable, full of surprises, and we can't control what's going to come up. The floodwaters still arise. Some challenges are large and difficult. And we remember the quote that I shared that I first got from Ajahn Nisibo, that all of my letting go has had claw marks on the way down. So I'd like to end with this wonderful poem by Wendell Berry. And apologies to Wendell Berry, because I'm changing the gender from an old man to an old woman. He says, I know I'm getting old and I say so, but I don't think of myself as an old woman. I think of myself as a young woman with unforeseen debilities. Time is neither young nor old, but simply new, always counting the only apocalypse and the clouds. No more measure or geometry, no cubism can account for clouds or satisfactorily for bodies. There's no science for this or art either. Even the old body is new. Who has known it before? And no sooner new than gone, to be replaced by a body yet older and again new. The clouds are rarely absent from our sky over this humid valley. And there's a sycamore that I watch as growing on the riverbank, it forecloses the horizon like the years of an old woman. And you, who are as old almost as I am, I love as I loved you young, except that old, I am astonished at such a possibility and am duly grateful. Unforeseen debilities, unforeseen challenges, unforeseen upsets, unforeseen joys. May the Dharma continue to offer us insight, support, wisdom, and ease as we navigate life and all the unforeseen possibilities. Thank you for your attention. So we're going to have a good 15 minutes in our breakout groups, and a couple people have left, and I know others might. So I want to say, just if any issue in your life is up, how might you bring both acknowledging the innate wisdom that you have, noticing when the dissonance is there, especially with the three characteristics or being with the truth of the way things are. Just share what feels right for you around wisdom and the changes. So enjoy your time, and I'll see you soon. Welcome back, everybody. Yeah, so wisdom. Who would like to share some of how you're discovering your own wisdom that's already there, how you're practicing with it to encourage more wisdom, and maybe if you're finding ways to simplify life and mind? And I'm interested. Yes, Judith, please.
Something Well, all of us in our group could really relate to every single thing you said. And
the universality of life changing, right?
Yep. And it just occurred to me at the very end that one of the reasons that the relationship of growing old to acquiring wisdom is that it becomes more urgent. Mm-hmm. It begins to feel more urgent because this letting go process, I mean, it either happens or you are driving yourself crazy by resisting it. It's, you know, it's one or the other. Mm-hmm. Things are going to fall away. They just are. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And I loved how when you were saying that, your hands went into a fist, because that's that energy of can urgency and open-handedness go together?
Right. Exactly.
Good question for us as we practice.
It's very urgent to let go, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you kind of dig in your heels and,
oh, my God, yeah. I'm going to let go.
But yeah. Really, is that the renunciation, can it be as simple as, and I simple in quotes, as letting go of things that are of no, that no longer serve us. Mm-hmm. And maybe the tight fists no longer serve us.
Right.
Or the ain't it awful no longer serves us. Or this should not be happening to me can no longer serve us, because the three characteristics of imperfect, impersonal, and impermanent, it's so, yeah. So thank you, Judith. Yeah, that urgency.
Suze, I have something to say.
Please.
Well, the thing that really I felt in my gut when you said it, speaking of Ajahn Suchito's definition of wisdom, was when you were saying about the five recollections, I will become separate to all I hold dear, or from all I hold dear. And you said, my mind wants an exception, a way out of the truth of the way things are. And you said, then I reset my intention for the truth. And I could really feel the challenge of that. Mm-hmm. And that I often do that myself, the way out, and in aging too, you know. I think, well, I won't really, I'll always be able to walk where I want to. You know, I'll just, you know, well, I really haven't had that problem before, you know, and I just want to make the way out, and then to reset it to know this is the truth. So I've really been inspired by the five recollections, you're reciting them in the guided meditation, then bringing it up in your talk. And I'm going to take on that practice. So thank you for offering that.
You're welcome. And I sit with two wonderful women on Wednesday morning, and one of them reminded me of how important it is. And the other one, the other week, we were talking about aging, and she said, none of us know what it's going to feel like, but right now, can we just say, bring it on. I'm going to meet life. I'm going to meet life. I'm not going to turn away from it. I'm not going to resist it or grumble about it. Yeah, there are going to be the grumbles, but then practice comes in and says, how wholesome is grumbling mind? And what the Aya said yesterday about, you know, that litmus test, if it leads to a wholesome state of mind, then go there. And I think the practice keeps on showing up for us. The Dhamma just keeps on showing up, because we've been doing it so long. You don't have to go like open up your book and look for it. If when we sit quietly, next thing you know, sometimes it was Rodney's voice. Sometimes it's Philip Moffat's voice, or Tim Guile, or Tiwari, or each other. I told Judith the other day that one of the things she said in our drop-in sit kept on showing up for me. You know, so it's a, the Dhamma is so available, but we do need to quiet down long enough that we let that, then it, because its voice has to be louder than the demanding mind voice that says, pay attention to me. I want, this is what we want, you know. So it's, yeah. Aren't we lucky? Here we are on this path. That however the Dhamma first introduced itself to you, wow, that's a good moment to remember.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing, sorry, is that in our group we just said, aren't we lucky that we get this time to talk about these things, to share with each other and hear and be heard.
Yes, so absolutely. And I'll announce later as well, but next week, Lauren is guiding the sit and will offer to keep the Zoom open another 30 minutes. So put it on your calendar, just because that's one of the things that when we did that focus group some months ago, people said, we want more time to talk with each other. And some of it can be social. Doesn't have to all, you know, we're talking from our hearts, and we can also say, you know, hey, what are you doing in your garden or where, whatever, what's happening in your life? So all of that's good. Anyone else have anything they'd like to share? I think it's really important to honor the wisdom that's already there, because sometimes we get caught up by the challenges that are ahead and how strong the resistances are. But then I think, you know, doing a little checklist in your mind of, oh, right, like those, that what Sylvia Boorstein calls untying, those moments when you saw the delusion or saw the fantasy or saw the grumbling and you went, oh, right, that doesn't feel so good. I think I'm going to go somewhere else. I think I'm going to go to even just a quiet mind or to offer oneself some metta, some compassion. Life ain't easy. Woof. But it's also exquisite. So there it is, those seemingly opposite things that walk around with us in any moment. And there we are. So, well, thanks everybody for doing your practice and being here and sharing. Let's just take a moment to close. So here we are, having expressed the Dhamma in our lives and having given ourselves some times of quiet. I'd like to offer the metta phrases that Philip Moffat uses at almost all of his retreats. And sometimes they just show up for me. And here are the phrases. May we be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May we all have loving hearts and quiet minds. May we be healthy, strong, and vital. And may we know love, joy, wonder, and wisdom in this life just as it is. Be well, everyone.